everybody. Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams. And today on the show, we've got Clarice Assad from Brazil. Part of the Assad clan, of course. And a couple of them are poking around the Manus Festival, to which I have been invited. And, you know, I know I'm cynical about education a lot, and I stand by that. I don't think that people should go into dangerous debt in order to finance an education for an industry that doesn't support anything other than people educating people. So it's an endless cycle, and I don't know. You want to know what I think about that? Listen to my interview with Simon Powis. But it's this time of year when I get to do all these interviews with the festival that I feel a little less cynical about things. And it is cool. It's a cool community. And the people that support it, you know, these guys, these old timers have been coming there for years, like Mark and Bill and, all these other guys that, you know, went to like, you know, our recitals when we were in college are still going every year to these things. And their support for this tiny little industry is again, something that I sort of poke fun at sometimes. And it's actually a very beautiful thing. Once you've seen it and you've seen how long... I graduated in 2004, and they're still around. You know, I guess I just didn't know that was going to happen. And now a decade has passed, and it's like they're still there. These guys, this core group of like, you know, Manus guitar aficionados. You know, it's a really beautiful thing. The new facilities, amazing practice spaces. The only thing is they've got, apparently their recital hall is right under the jazz school's recital hall. So every time someone's doing a solo, you know, solo guitar recital, there is a, you know, Brazilian marimba festival going on upstairs. And you can hear it. And that sucks. That's not something you want. You know, you want to have a nice recording of your little junior or senior recital so that you can send it to your mom or use it as a demo. And well, that's shot now. So that's something they're going to have to do. I guess they spent like, you know, $1 billion on renovations and they didn't think to do anything about that. But this is actually I'm re-recording this intro. I'm going to try and be as fresh as I can. But, you know, I did have ideas. I did talk about some things. I think I released it. And then just the way it came out, the way the file came out across iTunes or whatever, it just really amplified a lot of things that were nasty. A lot of like noises that I was making, and there was a chainsaw that I didn't think was a big deal because it wasn't a big deal the last time I recorded, but this time it just really came through, and there was a chainsaw during the entire intro. So in every moment of silence, there was a blisteringly annoying chainsaw sound. So I took it out, and I haven't really done that. I don't think I'd removed an episode from the air due to quality issues ever. I did it once because someone got mad at me and threatened to sue me. So I took it off the air and reevaluated it. And I, you know, took just that. That is the one episode where I don't have any, you know, there's no intro. I hope I'm not giving anything away and I hope I don't get sued. But, you know, I really wanted to keep the person on. A lot of you who know me personally, know that story. A lot of you who've been listening for the last couple of years know that story. But, you know, I think it's safe to say now that whoever that person is not an avid listener, and I don't really care what she says, and I understand that nobody really has lawyers, and who cares? The point is that that's the only time I took an episode down. I removed the intro completely, and I just went with the episode. I just went with the interview because that was what was requested of me, and at that time I was just like, I don't want to deal with this. I had too much going on. I forget what was going on. I think I was dealing with my hand. Something was going on with my hand, and then I had this just person yelling at me that they were going to sue me. And I was like, you know what? Let's just, no problem. Let's get rid of the intro, which wasn't raunchy. I think I was talking about like an anniversary or something. Anyway, the whole thing's ridiculous. You guys doing good though? It's really fun. We got a whole bunch of interviews coming your way. I've been interviewing people all weekend. It's now Sunday. And that's what I've been doing is sort of enjoying it. I love that it's down in, you know, on 13th and 6th. I love that it's across the street from Parsons. I mean, that old Manus building was nothing but just a, it was a, you know what it was? Do you guys know the story behind it? And this is something that I think I was talking to Gary Lee, the guitar maker, at a concert the other night. He confirmed that he had heard the same thing. I might be wrong, Gary, but I think you confirmed it, that Manus used to be an insane asylum for little girls. Okay, that's where we were before. And I don't know why people are like, oh, why are we leaving the old building? First of all, it wasn't the original building. The original building was on the Upper East Side and until, you know, the mid-80s or whatever. And then it moved over to the Upper West Side. Now, I do love the Upper West Side, but I'm there anyway. It is strange, though. This is the first year that Manus isn't there. So I walk past Manus between jobs, you know, every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday of the year. And this year it was strange that it wasn't there. You know? It was strange. You know that they used the facade in, what's the drum movie? You know, with the mean teacher from the Farmers commercials. You know what I'm talking about. What's it called? You know what I'm talking about. The drummers, you know which one I'm talking about. The big movie of the year. The jazz drummer. They use the facade from Manus for that, as that's supposed to be the music school they're in. That's pretty cool. Well, they're not using it anymore. So that's pretty, it is neat, but I like it where it is. If I had gone to school, you know, below 14th Street, that would have been a lot cooler. Maybe a lot. And I actually lived right above McSorley's at that point, so I would have been able to walk to school. I would have been in the same neighborhood as it. You know, I lived in the East Village. I would have walked over to just the beginning of the West Village. It would have been perfect. In other words, I was like on 3rd Avenue, and this one's on 6th Avenue. No big deal. 3 avenues away. I'm at school. I'm back home by 3 o'clock to, you know, take a nap, practice a little bit. Anyway, this is not a very interesting intro, is it? Nothing I can do about that. Let me tell you who we're sponsored by, though. I'm going to tell you that we're sponsored by SavageClassical.com. You can go to Richard Sage. He's going to give you the guitar of your dreams. And more importantly, he's going to do business with you the way that you want to have business done with you. I know that because I do business with him all the time. And he's the easiest guy to deal with in the world. He's never given me any shit. And when I forgot to do the read, when I forgot to do his advertising spot in the episode that came out 2 weeks ago, I wrote him about it. And I said, look, Richard, I forgot to do it. Let me credit your account. I'm so sorry. And I've done that once before. And he, instead of freaking out, he writes me back and he says, hey, it's no big deal. By the way, I've been getting a lot of positive feedback about your podcast or whatever, hearing good things about it, and you know, people love it. So keep up the good work. That's what I got when I wrote him and I said I forgot to do your read. That's what he told me. Now, if that's not the biggest sweetheart in the world, I don't know what is. When you compare him to a lot of the other crazy people that have these guitar shops. You know who I'm talking about. Like the guy who turns out the lights unless there are people in his guitar shop. You know that guy. Like the guy who, when I bought a pack of strings that were normal tension and I took them out of the store and walked halfway down the block and realized I wanted hard tensions, I was like, wait, I brought the wrong strings. The wrong D'Addario strings, proud sponsor. I came back in and I tried to exchange them. And oh my God, they had to go get the guy. They had to go get the owner. There were a lot of raised eyebrows. There was a lot of like, you know, don't let this happen again sort of shit going on. And that was what doing business with classical guitar dealers was to me when I was a kid. And now you guys have this amazing man with which you can do business whenever you want. All you got to do is go to Bayshore, New York, right? You get the guitars. You take a look at them, and you deal with the sweetest man on earth. That's Savage, Savage, classical.com. Also sponsored by Cathara Project. Cathara Project brings guitars. CatharaProject.org brings guitars, guitar teachers, and classical guitar performances to communities that otherwise don't have access to that kind of thing. Scott Borg, Andrew, Adam Levin, and Matt Rowe are going to these communities in need. They got communities in Boston. They've got one in Mexico, and you can help out and make sure that that everybody gets access to classical music, not just rich white people, right? We can actually get this to other people, and it does make a difference in people's lives to have classical music. I think more white people need classical music. It's not really about the white or the. It's what it is. It's about rich and poor, and education, and that's what we're trying to do, and with the Kathara Project, regardless of what you look like, it doesn't matter. It's what matters is everybody should have it. Everybody should have the opportunity to comprehend and enjoy high art, right? Fine art. They shouldn't just be limited to whatever garbage comes out, on the radio. They shouldn't. They really shouldn't. KatharaProject.org. Go there. Also by Casper, a new sponsor. I should have probably started with them, but I felt like I owed Richard a read. CasperTrial.com/insider. That's Casper, like the Friendly Ghost, trial.com/insider. But we're not talking about the Friendly Ghost, which is by far and away the worst cartoon of all time. I want you to go ahead and Google an image of Casper and tell me what you think he looks like. Especially the ones of him without the leg. He's a sperm. And he's a sperm with a face, and that face looks surprisingly like mine. But we're not talking about him, and we're also not talking about Casper from the movie Kids, you know. Don't worry, it's me, Casper. Anyway, we're talking about CasperTrial.com/insider, not Casper.com, CasperTrial.com/insider. Go through it, enter SLEEP50. As a code, and you'll get $50 off for listeners of a Classical Guitar Insider. That's CasperTrial.com/insider. Enter code SLEEP50. What it is it's a mattress. You've been thinking about buying a new mattress? Do it, or click on the banner on my website, BrettWilliamsMusic.com, and follow it through, and I get a huge kickback on that, guys. So let's sell some mattresses. All right, team? Get over there and buy some mattresses. You guys need it? Everybody needs sleep. I need some sleep. That's part of the reason this intro is what it is. It's like Sunday at 4. It's like the worst time I could possibly do an intro. I'm sorry. It's not as funny as it should have been. CasperTrial.com. Let's go there. Let's see what they got. What do you guys got over there? CasperTrial.com. You're joking. What's rooftop yoga? All right, sweetie. I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm excited for you. Anyway, so that's CasperTrial.com/insider. You know what? Let's get on with the show. You want to get a mattress? Do it. You don't? You don't. All right, we'll talk more about Casper next week. I got to come up with an idea for them. I mean, it's a hard week. All right, let's get on with it. Here is the incomparable Clarice Assad, CasperTrial.com/insider. Enter code SLEEP50. What were you doing here? And you were in Inwood.
I was, Washington Heights.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, which is where I am nowadays.
Yes.
Because I'm on dates. I date this girl up there now. And so it's the best neighbor. It's one of the best neighborhoods. It's just too bad it's so far away.
It's not that far.
It feels horrible.
Well, it's far from here.
It's far from like Manis, you know. It's far from 14th Street. It took me forever to get to 14th Street, mm-hmm. right? But it is probably the most beautiful.
I love the park.
Natural
over there. It's nice. The parks are great.
The whole thing's a park.
Yeah.
It's like you're in the middle of a park.
Mm-hmm.
What streets did you live on?
I was on Broadway and 192nd, right next to the Fort Tryon Park.
So that's your Dykeman.
Yeah, a little bit after that.
207. Below.
Yeah, like, no. Yeah, that's right. It would be 207.
Or 200.
No, I was on 192nd.
Uh-huh.
So after the park.
After the park.
Down there.
You like living up there, though?
I
like the cloisters?
I really liked it.
Yeah, I like it, too.
Before that, I used to live on the Upper West Side
mm-hmm.
for 9 years, I think.
Oh, my God. So you were here the whole time.
I was here the whole time.
What happened? Why didn't we run into each other?
I don't know.
Yeah. So, but as far as moving to New York, what brought you to New York? I don't think you studied here and stuff. From what I read, you're like a Michigan person.
That's right.
Michael Dougherty.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I went to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
That Metropolis Symphony, what the...
Amazing. That was one of the reasons why I wanted to study with him.
Yeah.
Actually, that was the reason I wanted to go meet the guy.
Modern orchestration.
Yeah, fantastic.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
If people haven't listened to that, they should go listen to that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Michael Dougherty's. I read that today. I was like, oh, wow. And then I kind of put it together because I heard your concerto on YouTube.
The guitar?
Piano. It seems like it's a piano concerto. Is that right? Are you playing
that? It's the sket singing piano concerto.
I didn't hear the whole thing.
Okay.
Well, but I got the sort of the little prelude in the beginning, I guess you could call it, or whatever. And I was like, so then putting the two of you together, sort of that aesthetic, mm-hmm. you know, that's sort of back to like almost Art Deco.
Yeah.
You want to call it. You know, like his Superman thing. Anyway.
Yeah, he's great.
So what did you, I mean, but so... I know that you went to college at those, you know, you were there and somewhere else, I forget. But then what brought you to New York?
New York was, for me, at the time, two reasons. Mm-hmm. One is that...
It's like 10 years ago now.
Longer than that. Mm-hmm. But I graduated from Michigan in 2004, right? Yeah. And I was dating somebody from New York at the time.
Right.
So it was the natural progression to be together after college.
Right.
That's why I came, to be together with my ex.
Right.
Now ex.
Right, right.
And lived in the Upper West Side for a long time. Tried to make it as a jazz musician. But in a time where it was really hard, because it was kind of post 9/11, and things were very depressed in the city.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know?
I was there for that. I moved in here in 2002.
There was a big cloud over the city mm-hmm. for many years, you know, that started going away, I think, maybe after 7 years. To 10. Yeah. It took a long time to go
away. I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I can almost put a number on it. It's almost right when the crash happened. That's when we started getting happier, I think, as musicians in New York.
It's true. You know, yeah.
Like 2008, I remember, as being a really good year.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that was the year that everything went to shit. Like, for people with
money.
You're
right. Yeah, for people with money. Yeah. Good for some, bad for some. Yes. But I think that you're right.
And
if you put a number.
Yeah.
I totally did. It was hard, and it was kind of... slow and depressing. The good thing for me was that I got lucky because I was writing a lot of music and getting, you know, commissions, things that I wasn't really wanting to do at the time. I really wanted to make it as a performer, but that was not happening for me.
Yeah.
No matter how hard I tried, I kept getting commissions. Isn't it funny? People are like, oh my God, you're getting commissioned to... It wasn't like a lot, but it was a good amount.
Composition commissions.
Yeah, and arrangements and things like that. Like, write this piece for this group here and then an orchestra piece. Things were kind of appearing for me in that department. And I eventually thought that's what was, you know, going to be it for me. Like, go that route.
Yeah.
And gave up performing altogether. At some point, I just stopped because it was a... useless to keep trying at the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really hard to get that kind of stuff off the ground, especially when you got that going on. And that's really interesting because that's what, you know, your bio doesn't correspond with your Spotify playlist very well. Like, your bio is like all these classical commissions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. It's the list is four or five paragraphs long, and it's very impressive. And then you put Clarice Assad into an engine on like a, you know, a music app or something like that, and it comes out with, I saw three jazz albums, or three fusion albums. They're not, you can't even really classify your music. It's great music, but it's an eclectic. You can't call it Brazilian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first album is a lot of, you know, a lot of it's in English, right? I mean,
oh yeah, there's something in there that I did with a friend. Yeah. Oh, she wrote a bunch of lyrics that I thought was a lot of fun.
Right.
So.
Oh, okay, cool.
We collaborated. Naomi Major, she's really good.
And as far as that struggle in New York to do that, mm-hmm. I mean, what was that? I mean,
it was painful.
Yeah, it is. I'm kind of doing that now.
It was painful.
Yeah,
it was painful. Yeah, well, you know, and I think, honestly, I think we should all pay our dues. You know, it's not things should happen immediately. I am very fortunate with so many things. You know, I never had to pay for college, for example. I got, you know, myself into a great program with scholarship.
Yeah.
That's amazing. A lot of people get out of college, they're in debt forever.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
So that part of it's good.
It's great. So when I got out, I was like, okay, I'm kind of, you know, on my own. But yeah. I have no debt.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
sure. I can't start, like, you know, getting into that now.
Yeah. Just for things I want.
That's right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Some trips.
Yeah.
Some clothes.
It took like, and it's still, you know, going, of course. I think careers are healthier if they're built slowly over time instead of, like, all of a sudden, and then you have a big crash, you know. So for me, it's definitely been the slow going way.
Right.
Yeah.
No, you have to see that, because you see that even just the soloists and stuff that play, you know, the guitarists that play and, you know, get really good early on, and then, you know, you see them in 20 years, and it's sometimes they have the same rep that they had when they won a competition.
A lot of people get stuck with that.
Because there's no impetus to continue.
That's true, and also because nobody else wants to hear anything.
Right.
But that.
That's what we hired you for, kid.
It's insane, isn't it?
Right, yeah. And as far as that, I mean, as far as growing up and stuff like that, I mean, you're a pianist, right?
Yes.
Right. So, you know, without going too far into the family history, because you are your own person, but, you know, and there's a huge difference between you and everybody you're related to. Mm-hmm. But there's also similarities, you know, obviously there's a lot of the vocalizing and stuff like that you and Body have in common.
Mm-hmm.
She was on the show, and she says she has a wonderful relationship with you.
Oh, yeah. We are like sisters.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like sisters. That's what she said. I think she said not like niece, whatever. But what's up with the piano? Why not the guitar?
Okay, that's a very good question. Because I really wanted to
you come from, like, a guitar royalty, you know, for lack of a better word.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah, you're just like, no!
They didn't want... No, it wasn't my fault. Of course I wanted to play guitar. It was the first thing I was asking for. Yeah, guitar.
Right.
But my dad was not interested in teaching me guitar at all.
Mm-hmm.
He...
That's hilarious.
I think many things happened here, you know. He was, like, not interested in seeing me become a guitarist, I think, because I didn't have very good... I wasn't very natural with the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't even good at the piano.
Mm-hmm.
But I was talented for, like, melody, and I had a very, very good ear. I could follow him everywhere with the harmonies and stuff. He used to play games with me and be amazed how spot on my ears were, you know.
So he honed in on that.
He did. And he's like, okay, she's probably never going to be that great of performer, I mean, pianist or whatever, because I didn't have the chops. I really did not have any natural talent for it. So he saw that, and he saw that piano, number one, is way easier to learn than guitar, and way easier to see harmonically what's going on and to even... compose, because you can see,
and he
the
is
range,
the composer,
right?
Yeah,
exactly. So he was thinking more like, okay, if I'm going to not push her into any direction, he never did that, but encourage her to do anything, that should be the best way to go.
Yeah,
you know, because you can see everything, she can think orchestrally and develop more as a composer using the piano, because guitar is, you know, tough.
Yeah.
It's not as obvious.
No.
Yeah.
No, I compose on the guitar for classical quartet, and it's not always conducive.
Yeah.
Like doing things like playing a score.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that.
It's different, right? It's,
yeah.
I of course at the time I had no clue that's what it was.
Right.
But that's the reason. And he got me a piano, and I loved it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed making music no matter what, and really it was harder to pick up a guitar and start doing what I could do at a piano.
Yeah,
right away, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean with the piano. So as far as, but you didn't necessarily choose it. That was his decision.
Yeah.
When you were young, how old were you when you started that piano?
I think I was 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, I told you that I really had no talent for it. I had no coordination.
Well, he also knew how much talent you had to have to make a dent.
Yeah, but he thought that I would never be able to play well. He says that. I'm like,
you're like, come on now.
I had to work so
hard. I wasn't that bad.
No, it really was bad.
Really?
Yeah, because also...
That doesn't...
Like,
I mean, it's so weird.
I know. I'll tell you why.
Why?
If you want to know.
Sure.
See, I was born with this... It's a genetic condition that affects your production of collagen in your body. So...
Really?
Yeah. So our joints, you know, people with this condition, it's called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. You have extremely, it's like fragile and also very flexible joints.
Mm.
So, you know, like your finger will break easily if you press against something like that.
Right.
And as a child, it was out
hammering
of control.
Away on a piano, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, we are naturally softer as children.
Yeah.
So that really was extremely strong back then. As I grew older and developed more muscle tissue and stuff like that, I got better at controlling my movements and stuff. So I got better at practicing and, you know, had more...
Stamina.
Yeah, stamina too, exactly. So I worked really hard on it. I had to go against, you know, the whole genetic thing against me. And I think, you know, just brain power came before anything.
100%. You know, these things, these limitations are literally the birthplace of all these other things that we do. I have the same thing body has.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's difficult.
It's difficult, but the podcast started because of it, and... Mm-hmm. The quartet started because of it. And the composition for the quartet started because of it. So, like, I just think that,
it's like life gearing it towards something completely different.
Yeah. And so for you guys to come to that realization so early is pretty... It's a pretty cool story. And then all of your successes since then have been, you know, because... You had soft joints. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not trying to... I mean, it's a horrible... I mean, it's all that stuff. Like, any limitation is painful. But yeah, some good stuff.
It's so interesting because back then...
But you do play. You do play.
I play now.
Yeah.
But back then, it was like nobody really knew what was going on.
I don't think they know about problems unless they're problems they can make money off.
Maybe.
Prescriptions. It just seems like they don't. They're not
There's
able
no
to fix
cure.
Anything. No cure for dystonia. No cure for whatever that.
No cure.
Low collagen.
Yeah, it's very confusing, and it's like so many types. Now there's a awareness for it that I didn't even know. But when in the 80s, as a child in Brazil, forget it. Nobody knew. They were like, okay, take her to the circus. She'd be very good at, you know.
So you could do, you could, like, are very flexible.
I can still do some things. Yeah, I'm very. I won't do that because it will hurt me.
Well,
but that's how flexible I am. I know. Can imagine, like, do all the.
Yoga. Let's see. You can't do yoga because you'll go too far.
It would just break me in half. Yeah, very flexible. Yeah.
And is that in your family or is it?
We're trying, you know, we're finding out more about that. It definitely comes from my father's side of the family, but not everybody has that. And it comes in different flavors, if you know, if you understand what I mean. It's not exactly the same for everybody. Like Odair has a little bit of that. You can feel like the texture of his skin is definitely more soft than, you know, my father's. But, you know,
it's
in that family side. And but nobody knows where it came from.
Gosh.
And we probably never will. It doesn't matter. We're all here. And
yeah,
we're
you
healthy.
Guys are all strong.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, everybody's doing fine.
Yeah, that just was a little setback as a child. I wish that we had known that before.
Now, I don't know which one is. Is your mom the one that runs the record label?
No.
Or is that Odier's?
No, my mother, she lives in Brazil. And she
is
a Portuguese teacher.
Really?
Yeah.
Just a teacher?
Yeah.
And I don't mean just a teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, like, any particular subject, or are we talking about a school teacher?
School teacher.
Like, first through sixth grade?
Something like that. And she, she's very well-read.
Is she retired, or is she still
doing
it?
She's retired,
yeah. Okay, yeah.
Literature freak, knows so much, like, amazing, very intelligent, brilliant. And very musical. She has a beautiful singing voice.
Yeah.
I think I get the singing from that part of the family, actually, more than, or a combination of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. My voice sounds more like my mother's, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So the mother can sing.
Yeah, oh, beautifully, yeah. When I was, I remember when I was a child, my father used to accompany her a lot at home, you know,
yeah,
parties and stuff. But she's not the label lady you're asking about. That's my aunt.
That's your aunt.
Yeah.
That's O'Dare's.
That's right.
Wife.
His wife.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
GHS Records, is that right? Am I right about
GHA.
That? GHA. And you're not on that label, right?
No, I'm not.
You got your own stuff going on.
Yeah, no, because I'm not really a guitarist. I mean, I've written for guitar, but...
That's right. That label's all guitar stuff.
It's all about the guitar.
What'd you write for guitar? How was that experience not playing guitar and writing for guitar?
Well, the first time I ever wrote for guitar, I didn't really write for the guitar because my father helped me. I wrote the
music. Your dad did your homework for you?
Oh, he wanted to help me, and he would get me like excited about getting a commission, but really he transcribed my composition.
Yeah.
Made it beautifully, and then... Because of that first commission, and that was a long time ago, maybe like 2000.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
That's a long time ago.
A long time. I was so excited I got a commission, but I never felt like, okay, that's really, I did that, because I didn't really write for the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I later on, I felt really embarrassed about that. So I thought, you know what? I have this sound in my head. I don't play, but I can totally get around it if I do it slowly. Mm-hmm. So I started picking up the guitar and trying the fingerings and trying things around in slow motion. I'm thinking, if I can suck at it in slow motion, a good player can do that fast.
Yeah.
And then that's how I started getting, you know, around writing for the guitar.
Okay, so you did end up having to play the guitar to write for it.
I think you it's the only way.
I think it's the only way.
I really do. And I still suck, but I can definitely check my progress. Sometimes, you know, I will send it to a guitarist and he will say, oh, there is a better way to do this. Shift and that.
Like
and
fingerings and stuff. But as far as the melodic and harmonic content.
As far as what it can do, I can take care of that. And I'm really happy about that.
Right. Yeah, no, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. And then that piece, I haven't heard that piece. What is that?
The piece that
you wrote.
The cheating piece?
Not the cheating piece, which is not cheating.
Well, the
you
first
were
piece
the
that
Korsakov
I wrote?
To, you know, Mussorgsky.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know
well,
what
thank
I mean?
You.
You're welcome.
No, the first piece that I wrote with the guitar in my hands and I did everything by myself was called Brasileirinhas, and it was a piece that I wrote.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have. Okay.
For
I
a
have
guitar
heard that.
Duo. Yeah, well, I was, that was painful, you know, to start doing the whole trying to get the.
Physically painful.
Yeah, physically.
Yeah.
Like, trying to make it work.
Uh huh.
But eventually, you know, you get a little better every time you do it, so I'm not so bad now anymore.
What kind of guitar do you play? Do you know?
My guitar?
Yeah,
the
or is
guitar
it just
I have
a guitar?
Now?
Yeah.
Gosh, well, now my father gave me a nice guitar.
Like a Humphrey.
I couldn't tell you what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Which is completely excusable.
Yeah.
You don't need to feel bad about that.
I don't know. It's I was like, what guitar is that? A good one. It's good.
A good one,
because
yeah.
he gave it to me because the one before was so bad. It
all
was
right.
a $100 guitar I got at a
And he's like, okay, that's
crappy
enough.
Shop.
Here you go.
That's right. Exactly.
Right.
And it was for a child. So I used to do things that were impossible in a real
guitar. when you started composing this, not the cheat piece as we call it, which is not a cheat piece, just so people aren't, are the piece that your father helped you with in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Brasileirinhas is what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
Okay, so Brasileirinhas, is that how, am I saying it right? Brasileirinhas?
Almost. Brasileirinhas.
Tell me what it means.
Okay.
Like ballerinas, but Brazil?
Inha is, inho is the diminutive of anything. You put in Portuguese, if you put inho or inha after something, it's like ito.
Mm-hmm.
Poquito in Spanish.
Yeah.
It's right?
A little smaller than usual, isn't that?
That's
that
right.
Okay.
So in Portuguese, instead of poquito, would be pouquinho.
Pouquinho.
And then brasileirinho or brasileirinha would be a cute way of saying these are little Brazilian pieces.
Brasileirinha.
Brasileirinha. Good. You did it good.
Brasileirinha.
Yeah. Okay. You got it.
Forget it for now. I totally will forget it. Brazilian.
You get a prize for that.
I've already forgotten to. I left the last time I said it. I know I left three letters out of
it. It's good that you have it recorded now. I can hear it over and over again.
I can just keep on saying it.
It's okay.
I hope it's okay. But the thing about writing for that, are you trying to tell me that when you started writing for that, you were writing it on a $100 children's guitar?
That's right.
And I got it
at, what was the shop again? Sullivan County.
Oh, we're talking upstate.
Some kind of like.
He like moved a trombone out of the way, dusted it off, and handed it to you.
It was like that. Maybe it wasn't even $100. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember giving Baji, my aunt, at some point, I did some arrangements for her, and she's the one who was like, "What the hell are you doing?" I'm like, putting something that. With the baby guitar, was easy to do.
Right.
It's like, oh, there's no way I can stretch this far with my pinky.
Yeah.
You know, so that's when I realized, okay, I better get a better guitar now.
Yeah, no, I mean, everybody should have a decent guitar, and I'm sure your guitar is probably great.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so you know, when you're in New York and you're struggling to do the jazz thing, you're out of school. What made you go into jazz? You studied composition.
Yeah, I did.
You studied composition. Where'd you start, though? We know you went to Michigan to get your master's with Michael Dougherty and others. But was he your principal teacher? Was he your main teacher?
Yeah, he was my teacher for my master's degree.
Yeah, forget it. Let's go backwards. Why don't we talk about him? So what you were drawn to him because of the same piece that I was at, the Metropolis Symphony, which is a symphony based on Superman.
That's right.
It's Superman.
I met, this is what happened. When I first came to the country, it was, I think it was 1997, 98, and I was heavily into jazz.
I thought you were going to say drugs.
No, never.
I was heavily into drugs.
No.
Heavily into jazz.
If you substitute that for music,
there you go.
That was my, that's my drug.
You're right.
But,
exactly.
You know, back then in Rio, I was subbing for my teacher as a piano player, and I really wanted to do jazz, so I went to Berkeley.
Okay.
That was my first stop. I got the opportunity to go there and study for free, can you imagine? So I went, and I hated it because... it was a huge school, too many people.
It does seem like they kind of comb the country for hungry mouths.
Well, now it's different than it used to be. Definitely now I cannot even... It's a different school. But when I went, there were way too many people, and I got scared. My English was horrible, non-existent. And then I thought also one of the things I wanted to do was to study orchestration, and it didn't have an orchestra, right? I loved symphonies. I loved Mahler. I was crazy about big orchestrations. So I thought maybe I could get...
You love Mahler too?
Oh, yeah.
Mahler's Fifth is my favorite.
Yeah?
Piece, like, of anything.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I used to listen to a lot of Ravel. You know, the French, forget it. Like, all the orchestrations that you can possibly imagine that he did, I used to know by heart. So... That was, you know, parallel to my love of jazz. And I thought, I really would love to get my hands onto, you know, an orchestra someday and be able to do something with that. And I couldn't do that at Berkeley. So I went to Chicago to a conservatory. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 4 years. That's when I found out about Michael Dougherty. So during my bachelor...
What was the name of the school in Chicago? It's called something.
It's called Chicago College of Performing Arts, Roosevelt University.
So you went there, you leave Berkeley because it's so big. Was there any other problems at Berkeley, or was it just sort of
No, it was just too big. I just felt like I couldn't make sense of it. You know, I went to a very small school. I mean, I went from 50 majors and whatever I was trying to major in at the time to like three.
Yeah. And once you start listening to orchestral music, once you start, the instrumentation, you know, once you start hearing that, once you start understanding that, it's kind of, it's over. Like, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Forget it. Yeah. Well, and then, like, when I went there, then this whole new world opened up because they were like, oh, there's no way you're going to right away start writing for orchestra. You have to understand what these instruments can do first, and you don't know anything because all I knew was, you know, whatever came from the jazz world.
That was a class I cheated in, and now I pissed at myself. I did.
Well, but you know, it was like 4 years of understanding the physicalities of every instrument you can imagine, writing for different combinations of instruments and getting them performed by students so that you would learn how to do it better every time. So I got a very good education out of it.
Yeah.
And learning, you know, the repertoire, which eventually led me to the music of Michael Dougherty. So by the time I was ready to graduate and choose my schools to go to get a master's, I had fallen in love with his orchestrations very much.
Right.
I applied for Michigan, got in.
There you go.
Yeah, studied with the man.
With the man.
Yeah.
One of my favorite American composers by far. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Absolutely.
I think he's amazing. I really do.
Because it really is all about, I mean, to me, it would be all about orchestration. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be like, who's going to give me the goods? I was a performance major.
Yeah, okay.
But now I'm doing it, and mm-hmm. I'm not doing it very well. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, I'll be like, that's not a sound.
You know, it's interesting. He has always relied on technology to write his music, even before, you know, these computer notation software came to the scene. I mean, he was using analog stuff to hear playback of his music with synthesizers back in the day, you know?
Right.
And he was never shy to say that. You know, a lot of people might, you know, be like, oh, you shouldn't do that.
That's incredibly interesting because, he's not a huge piano composer. He probably relies a lot on his computer.
He loves to. He says, I like to push play and imagine what it's going to be, you know, in real life. But, you know.
What was his primary? Was he... I'm not interviewing him, but definitely, you know, with his influence on your orchestral composition that I heard and stuff like that, or mm-hmm. or just like you seem to light up when you think about his music. But I mean, like as far as like his background, was it? Do you know anything about it? As far as like, was he a pianist in school? Was he composition all the time?
Definitely
composition alone.
He's a.
But as far as his thing with the computer and stuff like that, I mean, you had all the tools. You had the piano and then he probably really pushed you to use the software in the right way with the right plugins and instruments and stuff like that.
He tried, but no, it didn't work with me. The lessons I had with him were really good because he's very resourceful. Like he thinks. Mm. In a way that, because he's done so much, he has an amazing array of vocabulary of so many ways to orchestrate a passage, right?
Right.
And he will look at a melodic line that you're writing for something and be like, why don't you give this to the timpani and change the pitches of this melody? And then he would stop himself and say, wait a minute, I haven't done that. I have to do that. It's my idea. I have to do that myself.
You can't do that.
I just gave it away. You know, he's like, kind of brilliant that way. He would just say it out like, okay, you should probably do that. And then realize, that's really something I should do too.
Yeah, 100%.
And then, okay, what about
when
a violin?
Teaching,
a solo violin line with this. And when I was writing my violin concerto, that was my master thesis. I worked on it with him. Mm-hmm. I remember that I had no clue. I was so scared to write that, even it was a very small orchestra. I had never done it, so I was freaking out. And he was very funny because I was writing the notes pretty low on the G string and whatever. All sorts of
mistakes.
You were
like, I don't want the violin to sound like a violin.
And then he's like, want to hear violin? ? E string, that's all. So, you know, makes you very humble.
Right.
That's
Was he a hard ass? Was he a tough guy? Was he tough?
Well, I don't know. I think he's mellowed out a lot, you know? Really, I actually think so.
Yeah.
I saw him 2 years in a row this past
year. How
old
was he when you studied with him?
I think he was in his 50s, and now he's in his 60s.
So now he's sort of like reflecting,
really,
rocking
different.
Chair.
He's different now. He used to be tougher, I think. But anyway, he's amazing. He's very supportive of my music. He's come out to hear me perform with the orchestra and, you know, hang out, take me to dinner. And we have a good relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, he is present, you know, and that's very nice because I graduated and, you know, over 10 years ago already. It's not a requirement that you should stay in touch with your mentors, but we have, and I'm very, very grateful for that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's something that I think is unique to the classical music universe.
Yeah.
Is sometimes it gets, not in your case, but sometimes it does, like what would you call it? The hero worship does get a little kind of up there, and I'm kind of like, well, you know, that's not really, maybe they aren't worthy of that much worship sometimes, but like, yeah, like I, same thing. I have relationships with both my master's and undergraduate teacher, like big ones, like where we do keep in touch and same thing. And I think when I talk to people from other places, like, you know, like, I don't know, painters or actors or stuff like that, I don't think that they ever talk to their teachers. But, like, the teachers are a big part of our lives. I think, you know what it is? I think it's just that 1 hour to 2 hours a week where it's just the two of you.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's such a unique relationship.
Yeah,
and you do
amazing.
That for 4 years or for 2 years? Come on.
Yeah, you have
How are you
going to
let that person go?
No, you can't.
On Thursday, tomorrow I'm going to go out to lunch with one of my students that was in high school, and now he's in college, and I was like, hey, you want to go to lunch? He's like, yeah. So I'm like really excited.
Good.
Yeah, it's like the first time I've done it. I'm into it.
That's cool.
Yeah. But so as far as you know, doing that, did you ever do any student teaching or anything like that? Have you ever taught?
I have never taught composition directly, like any of these teachers have taught me.
Right.
But then again, what is that mean, really?
I don't think
they ever taught me composition. None of them.
Orchestration.
They helped me.
Coaching. Coaches.
Yeah. Like they saw patterns that they might want to break because, oh, you're doing too much of that. You know?
Yeah.
You're trying try something different. Just, you know.
When they did that, you know, I'm always curious about that because I didn't. What do you call it? You call it an interpretive artist or a creative artist? I guess, is that right? Are those the two schools or whatever?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, like an interpretive artist would be like a guitar major.
Okay.
Or an actor.
Okay.
A creative artist would be a writer or a composer.
Okay, got it.
Even though that's not fair. You know, as far as when you are, you know, in that school, and you're getting that kind of critique on something like that, I've always been really curious about what that does to you guys. Because with us, it's, you know, you have to take a few steps back. It can be very stifling. You know, it can affect you in all sorts of different neurological ways. But I can't imagine. I've never had a composition lesson, so I've never. Yeah, I can't believe, now that I'm saying, I cannot believe I haven't had one. but as far as, like, doing that, I mean, it seems like I didn't want to do that when I went into it because I was like, oh, I already did that with the guitar, and it made me a completely different guitarist than the way I started out. And I know that I just want to do what I want to do now. But, I mean, how do you take that critique when you have something like that? I mean, does it hold you back a lot, or does it push you forward? I mean, how does that all work out?
I think, well, when I was...
Is it a problem? Has it ever been a problem?
When I was in college, I was there to learn.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody forced me to do anything.
Yeah. You were a good student. Were you a good student?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Straight A student.
I mean, as far as, like, you know, deferring to the teacher's judgment.
Yeah, I think so.
Fight. Yeah.
Well, I never really went too much against my own natural... abilities, you know, because I do come from a Brazilian culture, musical culture, and that's full of beautiful harmonies and melodies and, you know, things that really, in new music, I kind of a little bit frowned upon, like, okay, tonal, you know. I did have a little bit of a clash there because...
Americans are very atonal. American academic institutions celebrate atonality in a way that's unprecedented.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So that definitely was something that I felt a little bit back then. But it wasn't it wasn't the same as if I had been there 20 or even 10 years before, it would have been a nightmare. I would have been kicked out of the program.
Because you were too tall.
I was way too tall and, you know.
God, that's interesting.
Yeah, but I was, I think, there at the right time because things were starting to change.
Yeah.
It was more of that do whatever you you want. Find your own voice.
Well, and you're with the right guy, too.
Right. At first, I was. I had several teachers before. This one teacher landed on Roosevelt University, who was with me for a long time. And I really, I like her a lot. Mm-hmm. I like her music a lot. Her name is Stacy Garup. And what she helped me with was not so much composition so much. It was she disciplined me like nobody else.
Yeah.
She helped me learn how to write music. Like, you're going to sit here and you're going to do that, right? You're going to put the dynamic marking where it's supposed to go. You're not going to be elusive about anything. You're going to be very specific.
Okay, and that's huge.
And that's huge.
Like, so you're talking about your dynamic markings, your accents,
about all
staccatos,
of that. Yeah.
All that stuff, making sure that's all in there.
Yeah, and then timbre, what do you mean? What is this? And I really didn't know what I meant. So she made sure that I would get out of my lesson knowing what kind of sound I wanted.
Right, not just like writing the notes and being like, well, I'll just talk to them.
Yeah, no. Oh, no. And she used to be like, evil about it.
Yeah,
in a good way, because she would grade you and take points off of every little mistake you did.
Amazing.
If you didn't put, like, the hairpin was not in the right place and the pianissimo was not in the right place.
Let me ask you a question about that.
She would take points away from you.
I'm going to get some free info off you real quick. But, you know, when you're dealing with the hairpins, do you have to put a... Do you put a dynamic at the beginning of the hairpin? And, like, say you have two hairpins, a crescendo and a decrescendo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you put a dynamic at the beginning, saying, like, piano, and then a mezzo forte in the middle, and then a piano at the end? Or is the hairpin just going to suffice, and they can just... What do you do?
That's up to you.
That's up to you.
It, and then, you know, of course...
And she would probably say, put it all.
Yes, she would. And she would be like... And I'm like, at the time, I had no idea.
Right.
Was dealing with imaginary things. I didn't know what dynamic really was.
Yeah, geez.
You know,
yeah,
like it was a fog for me, you know. So
yeah.
She took away the fog.
You were faking it till you make it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
She took away a lot of the fog, which is so helpful. And I'm really thankful for her, you know, for being so hard on all of us at the time. Not
well, she must have been sort of like, okay, a hairpin is a, you know, she must have been frustrated.
Yeah, but, you know, she was great. I mean, in the sense that... Like, what do you mean? Like, how loud is loud? You know, how, you know, and she would be like, well, think of it as your speaking voice and murmuring and just saying very, very.
Would she have you compose in English? I mean, as far as dynamic markings and stuff like that?
Everything
as far
is,
as expression markings?
Yeah, because, well, you have sometimes three languages going on in a score at once.
Yeah.
But she was, I think she had the two. Three languages going on at once, but she did write a lot of it in English, like her...
And she had a specific idea.
Yeah. Like, the tempo markings were maybe sometimes in Italian, but, you know, she had something specific to say. She'd just write it out in English, because most of the performances happened in the States at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, so that was really good to learn.
That's huge.
That is huge.
Right. And then at that point, because that'll make it where you, that's a great foundation.
And you know what's so kind of, I think it's cute, is that she used to be Michael's student herself. So
Michael Doherty.
Yeah. Okay. So I was, she was his student, and
she was kind of prepping you for.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Without knowing it. Yeah, it was interesting.
That's good. So then you had that, you're like part of the lineage.
Yeah.
You're working your way up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very nice.
How old is she then? She's younger than him.
Stacey's not that much older than I am now. She's going to be in her early
late,
40s.
Yeah, right. Oh, really?
40s. Yeah.
Oh,
because
wow.
I think I was like 20, early 20s. She was late 20s.
Yeah.
She was very young when she started teaching at Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
That's also was very nice for me as a woman composer to have a young, you know...
A young woman.
Woman come teach us, because before that, we had... Older men.
You can say it.
No, yeah, it was just...
I'm going to be one.
It was nice. No, it was very nice to have that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
No, that's fun.
It was encouraging.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, we're not alone here.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And most, yeah, because most of her students were probably, I mean, well, that's not true. There's a lot of women now.
No, back then it was in my school, it was a small program, and most of them were guys.
Well, it blows me away. The one thing that I started realizing in this whole thing, because there are women guitarists now, mm-hmm. you know, much more than there were in like 1997 mm-hmm. when I was in school. Mm-hmm. There was like one or two.
Yeah.
And then when I left, there were like three, and now it's like half. And, but as far as I guess, I don't know. I probably just made that up. But what blows me away is the conductor.
Mm.
Not many women conductors. I saw like one in Lincoln Center mm-hmm. was being advertised. And I was like, I want to go. I've never seen a
really?
Woman conduct
anything.
Oh my anything.
God. I've worked with so many of them now.
Yeah. That's so I just funny. Realized that I've never yeah. personally seen
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's true. It is crazy.
I mean, it's pretty crazy.
It's a difficult world to break into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not very accepted by whoever decides these things. I don't know how it happens.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Have you ever you've conducted, right?
Not really. Not
did you ever take any conducting courses?
I did, but it yeah. wasn't...
Mine was like led by the marching band director, who was a woman.
I didn't have a very good teacher, I think. You know?
Yeah.
He was a little bit like getting ready to retire.
Yeah, they're all kind of like... Because they're all band guys. You know, they're all band.
Yeah.
All the conducting departments are filled with band people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm like, I'm not a marching band person. And mm-hmm. I think I did like Vaughn Williams for my finalists. Something okay. I would have never chosen.
Yeah.
You know, because they're just band people. I think band people are like a completely different breed.
Mm-hmm.
No offense, band people, but you're a different breed to me. Like you guys, it's a whole different world.
It's different.
It's almost just like it seems, and I hope they will come on and correct me, and I hope that they will email me and tell me that I'm being an asshole. But they, it seems like it's just very vocational to them.
Hmm.
You know? Like, there are trombone players that are outside smoking, and I'm like, why would you smoke if you're playing a wind instrument? That's because it's a job. You know, they're in unions. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
As opposed to, like, you know, just, like, tirelessly composing or trying to become a jazz singer in New York or whatever.
Hmm.
You know, all these romantic things.
But sometimes just, people fall into jobs.
Yes, they fall into jobs, and then that's it.
And then they can't get out.
Yeah.
You know? It's not so easy to be a musician. You know that, you know.
It's not easy.
You have to be, you have to fight your way through and... I see sometimes I perform with so many different people,
mm-hmm.
and I perform with people who are gigging musicians, people who are in unions, people who are in all kinds of walks of life. And definitely, you know, sometimes you go and you perform with an orchestra that is playing by all the rules, and they're not really happy to be there. You know, you see that because they do that every day. It's the same thing. There's no excitement. So... It's sad
yeah.
to see that there is no excitement for them to be there playing that music. And I would I would not be happy either.
I wouldn't be happy either.
Yeah. So I don't know. Whenever I see that, I'm like trying to spice it up. Let's make music together and you know do something. Sometimes it works. It's fantastic.
Yeah. You ever seen Mozart in the Jungle? You seen that show?
No.
You watch TV ever?
No.
No TV?
No TV.
What do? You read a book?
Oh, I do music.
You do music all the time?
All the time.
How do you do that? See, I'm not like that. It makes me upset. Well, how do you so you do it in the morning before you go to bed the whole time? It's just constant?
It's constant.
See,
also because I have to, I take care of a lot of my own, you know, business things. Mm. I mean, all the performing, all the traveling, all the publishing, everything. Most of it I do it myself.
All the way up until bedtime.
So if you think of music as the a holistic thing and the business that goes into it, I'm mm-hmm. doing it too. So it takes 24 hours a day.
Yeah. As far as the, you know, your last album came out in like, what, 2014? I saw that was...
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was, I mean, as far as like that, I mean, that was, so you're doing all the commissions. I mean, you're not, that's not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still at it. What are you doing at the Manus Festival? Are you doing that?
No.
You doing your jazz stuff?
I'm Recording.
And we say jazz, but it's not jazz.
It's not really jazz.
It's like you're scatting. You're doing all sorts of. You're making noises with your mouth.
I guess so.
Is that you? Going like woo, all that stuff.
Where?
On these recordings.
Come on, do that again. That was funny. Woo. Woo. Yeah, yes. I guess so.
Yes, among other things.
Yeah, I mean, I love sounds.
Sounds.
I'm really into sounds because, well.
You listen to electronic music ever?
Not so much. I'm more into with the sounds that we can make without having to change them through a synthesizer or.
Yeah.
Like organic sounds or. Yeah. Extended techniques for instruments and, you know, more into the
acoustic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The voice can do so many sounds, you know?
Yes.
You can change the quality of the voice to make it sound like anything you want, you know? And you can do percussion, you can do overtones, you can do imitate, you know, the triple tonguing and stuff that flutes can do and trumpet players can do. Mm-hmm. All of these things that are not really, you know, taught when you go to study voice in college. You pretty much study how to be a soprano or maybe vocal jazz. But a lot of sounds have to do with languages, and I love that. You know, you borrow from different languages and you create your own vocabulary.
Were you good with Were you good with diction? Were you good with language? Like imitation? Are you good with accents?
Yeah, I think so. Not accents, not so much? English so much because I have an accent myself. But
you have a very light accent, though.
But it's there. Yeah. You know, but I would say I have a good ear for sound, definitely.
Did you go to an English high school? Or
No. I learned when I came here. I used to suck at it. It was bad. But I did learn French at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And
that'll loosen it up right there.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is just monster.
It's so many sounds, you know.
Yeah,
and you know,
it is the opposite.
You start playing with your voice, trying to imitate instruments. I started trying to imitate the sounds of instruments to accompany, you know, passages.
Which a lot of people don't know. That's all scatting is.
That's right.
Like I didn't really know that until I was probably 20.
It's wordless singing. That's all there is.
But you're supposed to be sounding like a certain instrument. I don't know who. I think Billie Holiday or somebody. That I don't know about Billie Holiday. First of all, I don't know what I'm talking about. But one of the jazz singers, said that's what she's doing.
Yeah.
She's imitating, she's either imitating the guitar or the saxophone or, or the trumpet.
Yeah.
You know, she chooses an instrument.
Like that, yeah. Right. Some people can make amazing imitations of these things.
Right.
But I don't know. I just think of it as far as orchestrating. If I'm playing the piano and singing, there are many different sounds I can make.
Right.
So why not make use of them? You know, sometimes it sounds a little funny and weird. Some people don't like it, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely more interesting than just playing singing to me, you know?
Yeah. You like it.
I think so. I mean, if you're singing a passage like... Right?
Yeah.
And then you can spice it up. Like that.
Yeah, well, I can't do that.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why not? It's different, right?
It is different.
Or you can change the same thing. It's the same melody, but you can do it many different ways.
That's pretty cool.
It's cool, huh?
It's kind of cool to see it right in front of me.
Or you can just la-la-la it. La-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. It's not as interesting.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, you see a lot of people, especially singers, you know, will be walking down the street or generally in the halls of music schools, and they will be making noises.
Oh, yeah.
They like to make noises.
Totally.
Singers
so
always
fun.
Are like, blah, 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 and I'm just like...
It's annoying.
Sometimes it's annoying.
Next to you.
When you're just trying
to have
breakfast.
I've heard that a lot. Shut up.
But other times, it's charming. But when you actually see what I just saw, which is someone who practices this or puts this into practice,
it's
amazing.
It's like you can't stop, really.
Right.
You walk around constantly doing that. I mean, I do. It's really annoying. I know it's annoying. And you see who else I did do
it. It's not annoying right now.
Yeah.
No, this is not annoying.
You see, like I saw... when was it? 2008?
Yeah.
I did a... professional workshop series event at the Carnegie Hall with Bobby McFerrin.
You did?
I did.
Who is the king of that, of what we're talking about?
And it was insane.
He's not annoying.
No, no. But he got annoyed.
With you?
Not with me. No. There were 20 singers of different singing traditions in the workshop.
Okay.
And we were supposed to be performing at Carnegie Hall a week after the workshops with him, this instant opera.
So you were just part of this pool?
Part of this pool of thing. And there was like absolutely no kind of, I think, order to it, you know? So you had 20 singers.
Let's get a bunch of noisy people.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And they were trying, you know, the Carnegie Hall people were trying to put some, I don't know really what they wanted, a story behind this opera that we were going to create. And so they hired two people to help with the theatrical part of it. But, you know, it was not enough time for anything to happen. And Bobby McFerrin loves his freedom. So once these other people came in the very beginning, there was a little bit of tension happening between with their ideas of what this should be like, you know, in the end. So he would just kind of sign off and go away, scat over there, like
the corner, just go into the wall.
Like, you know, they start talking. Oh, well, we do this and we do that, and the scene should be like, you're just like, oh, like go away. You just hear that.
That
was his way of like space out and, you know, be on his in his own world, and I saw it happening. It was very funny.
And that is amazing because what they wanted? What did the Carnegie Hall elite expect?
It wasn't like that. It was just, you know, you have 20 singers, you have an hour and a half to put in a concert, and you need some organization, right?
And they were still, well, the irritating thing is that it's showtime, and they are still discussing what the show is going to be.
Nobody knew. We went into it like, okay, it was a workshop, but they wanted a performance. I think the mistake was to have the performance, honestly, even though it was fun. But it wasn't polished. It was the first time they ever did that. So you can imagine it was a little tense at times. But what an experience that was for me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, fantastic. And I've made so many great friends. We've been singing together ever since.
When was that?
The friends I've made.
I mean, when was the Bobby McFerrin?
2008.
Okay, 2008, babe. It's the real deal.
Yeah,
we love it.
Yeah,
we love 2008.
Keep going back to that year.
Oh, I could go back to that year. I really, really like that year. What's going on at Manus tonight? Are you doing it? You going? What are we doing there tonight? Do we know? I'm trying to look. I don't know.
Oh, I don't even know.
Oh, you have an iWatch.
Tomorrow,
I like your iWatch band too.
Oh, thank you. It's cute.
It is cute.
Tomorrow, there's a workshop that I'm teaching.
You're doing the workshop.
I am teaching a vocal improvisation workshop.
Okay.
Vocal body percussion.
What
sounds?
Time? What time?
I have to see.
You just got into town.
I just
and you're
got
doing
in
me a huge
morning.
Solid. I know.
I got in before immigration was even open. We had to wait in the plane. Wait to the plane.
But you're not immigrating. Are you not an American citizen?
Oh, no. But, you know, everybody has to go through.
You live in, like, Albany or something, right? Don't you?
Now?
Where do you live?
No. I just moved to Chicago.
Oh, I thought you were a resident at Albany.
I did that.
Oh, you did a residency
2 years ago.
So, Chicago, what do you think?
I love it.
Hell of a town.
It's amazing. I have a lot more room there.
Oh, God.
It's nice.
Man.
Probably going to be tough in the winter, but winters are horrible here, too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are. Did you end up ever getting winter boots?
I have, or something? I have them. I got them.
Yeah, I got them, too.
I got them.
I was like, here's $200. Thank you. If these break, I'll be upset.
No, they're great.
Oh.
Steel toe boots. I got it.
You got it.
Yeah.
Well, Clarice, is there anything else you'd like to speak about before we sign off?
I think we talked about so many things. I don't even know.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
What piece would you want? Do you have any idea what piece? Do you have an MP3? You don't have to have it on you now.
Mm.
But do you think about it for a second? Do you want to tell us what MP3 we might listen to? I mean, you know, well, I've got it. I mean, let me just see what we got here. Let's see. Is it all right if I do this?
Oh, yeah.
Just check you out real quick over here. Let's go to Clarice. There you are. You come right up. You're very searchable. Let's talk about the latest album.
The latest album is with my father.
It's called
coming out.
Imaginarium.
No, that's old already. The new one is coming out this month.
Oh, come on. You almost forgot to tell people.
Yeah.
So you got a song with your father.
No, the whole CD is with my father.
Okay, the whole CD.
The whole CD.
You're singing?
I'm singing and I'm playing. He's playing.
Who else is playing?
I have guests. We have guests. We have Derek Brummell, clarinetist, composer, phenomenal guy. Phenomenal musician.
Derek Brummell?
Brummell.
Brummell. B-E-R-M-E-L.
Correct. He's one of my favorite contemporary composers today.
Really?
He is.
Okay, I'm going to write that down.
He's amazing.
I always try to write down a contemporary composer.
Oh, you're going to love
Derek. Because I think you and I are both tonal. Brummell.
Derek is phenomenal. You're going to love him.
Is it Brummell or Brunel?
With M. With an M.
All right. I'm going to love it. I'm going to love it.
You are.
What piece are we talking about? Well, we have to play something off the old one because this is going to come out on Friday.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, it's gonna be like tomorrow.
Okay, also Mike Marshall is on that too. You know Mike?
Mike Marshall?
Mandolin.
I think he's
guesting on one tune with us. It's a nice CD.
Mike Marshall. And then off of this CD, because this is tomorrow, what about Imaginarium? What song do you think would be appropriate for that? So we've got, how about Why?
No.
How about?
Oh, you like Romero Lubombo?
What's Romero Lubombo?
Romero Lubombo is a fantastic guitar player.
Yeah.
So
he sounds great. I love his name, so I'm sure that I'm going to like him.
He's great.
Lubombo.
Lubombo.
Lubombo. What song is he on? Puerto de Luar?
Not that one.
Pizarro?
That's a fun one, too.
Is it?
There's a lot of singing on that one. Okay, you know what? Romero is on Da Imaginação. See if you can find that one.
Got it. Which I think it means the imagination.
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
Almost.
I messed up. That's true. All right, let me go back to it. I'm almost there. Anyway, well, we'll do that. There it is. All right, so they're going to listen to that in the end.
Oh, that's sweet.
If that's okay, do I have permission to use that?
You absolutely have.
Permission granted. Thanks so much for joining me, Clarice.
Thanks
for making the time
me.
For this, and I will try and make it to the mouth masterclass tomorrow.
Great. Thank you.
All right, guys, that does it for me and Clarice. I hope you guys had a good time. I did. I absolutely, I love that interview. Next time, we're going to have an interview with duo Montez Kirchner. They are a duo from Germany. He's originally from Venezuela. I saw them perform. They're great. That next time, also look forward to Sergio Saad, Arthur Campella, and everybody else from the Manus Festival. Thanks so much, and I know there's some sound quality issues. I'm going to work on it a little bit when I get around to it. Right now, I'm just collecting these interviews, so thanks for your patience. I'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Paris.
Voa, 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 vem que me quis.
Sobrevoar o Senegal.
Sobre os rios, sobre os mares, pelos ares, pelo luar.
Nasci de pão, vou para o céu. Não caibo na gaiola, não me calo na prisão. Faço um buraquinho pra ninguém ver. Sou tico de pão, sou tico de pão. Eu vou pra fora, beleléu. Cada fio de vitrola me decola na canção. Canto uma seresta para entreter. Sou tico de pão, sou tico 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 pão.
A tico tico eu sei de tudo que sonhei. De cada voo incerto mar. Quando o sonho desperta em mim, o sonhador não pode parar.
Quem vai calar meu cantar?
Larari, larará.
Meu canto é vento e luar.
Larari, na, na, na.
Cantarolá, larilá.
Imaginação.